it's been a rough week for Indiana law enforcement. Mm. And I thought I'd kind of get your take on that. Now lawmakers are starting to weigh their options. Senator Jim Merritt plans to pursue some gun violence legislation in response to what he calls a crisis now in Indiana's urban areas. Is Indiana in a crisis mode, in your take?
I don't know if all of Indiana, I wouldn't say that, but obviously if you're from Indianapolis, you feel it. Gary, you name your places where these incidents have occurred. We had a police officer who was killed here just a few short years ago. Really what I think is happening is it's more of a society kind of a thing. I don't know if you can really say it's Indiana or big cities or small cities. It's more of a, at least from my perspective, I think it's, you know, people thinking that that's the only way they can protect their turf. Whatever illegal thing they're doing, they think that using a gun to shoot police officers is in their mind, somehow that's okay, that they're defending what they're doing. And that is a long way from where it used to be when a law enforcement officer came and people complied with the law. If you were caught, you were caught. And it's just really disturbing to me to see the violence. And you know, the Indianapolis has had really a tough time. Chicago, I mean, you name these cities, and it's just, it's ongoing. It doesn't seem to be stopping. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the answer is, but we've got to have much more respect for law enforcement. We've got to get people back to the basics of thinking about, you know, if you're caught, you're caught. You don't shoot your way out of these things. And the mentality, I think, for the criminal element has just changed a lot, and they just don't regard life the way that it used to be regarded.
This legislation is a gun crime enhancement bill. It aims at harsher penalties. Is this the best way to try to make progress in this?
Well, I suppose it'll help. I guess if you're a criminal and you're thinking that there may be, if you get caught and you've used a weapon, you know, to commit a crime, or you're armed, whatever, and you kind of throw the book at them for that, maybe that'll keep that next event from happening that might lead to a police officer being injured or killed. You know, boy, I think it's just deeper, really, but obviously you've got to do things to change the mentality of these criminals.
What about here in Terre Haute? You know, we talk about a city police force protecting the community, but what goes on behind the scenes to help protect police officers?
Sure. I mean, that's a great question that we really revisited that after our officer was shot and killed, because are we doing the right training? Are we providing them with the right tools that they need? And I really believe that we've upgraded their weapons. They all have, you know, brand new bulletproof vests. They have tasers, so they don't have to use their service revolver. You've got to continue to do training about awareness, safety, getting multiple officers at a scene where there's a potential situation. I mean, we go over those things with our police officers repeatedly. But still, you never know when you come to a situation that may be routine 100 times in a row, or 99 out of 100, and then something happens. And so you have to be prepared on every single call that you make that this could be a potential situation where somebody might have a weapon. And, you know, all you can do is just keep training, keep the awareness, make sure you're staffing and providing the resources to support our officers. And I think we do a good job here, but I thought we did a good job before too. And I'm sure Indianapolis would say they're doing what they need to do, but still these things happen. And so you just got to keep ramping it up.
I hear where climate change was the major focus of the U.S. National. It was a Conference of Mayors annual meeting wrapped up Monday in Dallas, Texas. And I believe the mayors from Indianapolis and Carmel, I don't know if there are any others there from Indiana. But what are those common topics that mayors tend to talk about at these conferences?
You know, it's mostly related to emissions a lot of times, and what you're doing as a community to try to deal with reducing the reliance on fuels and electricity and all those things. So that seems to be the biggest play that you usually hear. I read a lot of the materials. I didn't go to this particular conference this time, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of stories coming out about that. And, you know, we're trying to do our things here too in Terre Haute, but it's really a bigger issue than just a city. We need to do our part, but the bigger the city, the more the problem. And so in our case here, you know, we're looking at things, what we can do as a city, and then what we hope that we can talk to the public about. Some of these things, though, they really take it to another level. And I don't believe we're there in Terre Haute yet, but I think that we need to continue to look at all these things and see what impact we're making. you know, I don't believe everything I read. You know, there's a lot of it in the science of this climate change and the global warming and what we're doing to the, you know, the atmosphere. Some of it I believe, some of it I'm not convinced of yet. And so I think we all need to be educated. We continue to need to stay on top of this. And we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to be as green as we can, keep our communities clean. That's my focus areas.
What are some, maybe one other hot topic that I'll call it that usually comes up at these meetings, that it's good to get together with other cities, other mayors to try and, you know, go forward with?
I think that one's been pretty topical the last few years, but I think another one is abandoned housing. You know, there's a lot of discussion about houses that are just being, people are walking away from them in communities, and what do you do about that? It's really difficult because there's a lot of laws where every state has different laws about how you handle a house that's either gone through foreclosure or bankruptcy, where we condemn it, or all of those maybe apply to some of these. And what can we do to be more efficient with either rehabbing those, finding some funding source to rehab those houses, or get them torn down as fast as we can to get some new development? And I know that's discussed almost every mayor's meeting, and I know IACT has some things coming up about that. And I think one of the focus points now is maybe we start looking at it before it becomes condemned or before it becomes to the point where it's really not salvageable. So I think that idea and those concepts are broadening, but we've got to have some loosening up of the laws to help us react much faster, because if it takes a year, year and a half to get control of a property, well, you can be assured if it's sitting vacant for that time, it's likely to be unsalvageable.
It's been a while since we've talked about the progress on the wastewater treatment plant. Mm-hmm. How's that going? Any new updates here in
July? We're about 3 months ahead of schedule, so I'm still excited about that. You know, construction still goes on. We got about another year or so, but we're starting to bring some of the pieces online. And what's complicated about this is you got to keep treating the wastewater. And so as you add a component to it and then you switch over, then you have to rehab the old part, and or you're just expanding whichever part it is. You can only do that through a very methodical process to ensure that you're not discharging anything that you shouldn't be to the river. And so as we bring these pieces online, we're finding that things are working like they should be, but you always run into a few little glitches and things that you have to work out, especially the computerized components. And so we're trying to do it very strategically and very slowly to make sure we get it right. But it's exciting that we're ahead of schedule, and it's really exciting to know that this is going to be the largest public works project in the history of the city, and that we're going to be able to do so much more treating waste from an economic development perspective. We're getting rid of the smell, and we're going to stop discharging dirty water into the river.
There was also plans at one time to use, I guess, an area pond to hold mm-hmm. water. And now, because of some recent technology, that's been negated.
Yeah, when we put the plan together several years ago and got it approved, you know, we looked at the best use of that, those lagoons. There's four lagoons down there that International Paper used to use for their waste disposal of their products. And we purchased that, acquired that from them, and we were going to make one big lagoon where instead of running the overflow into the river, you run it into the lagoon and then you treat it. You send it down to the treatment plant. Well, that was a good solution for us, but along comes a newer solution that allows us to, instead of dumping it in the lagoon, we run it through what's called a Storm King. And basically it cleans out, picks up all the debris, it runs it through a system, and then it adds some chemicals, and then there's a UV process at the end to kill off all the bad stuff. And so you're putting clean water back into the river. So we don't have to store it, and we can run it through this system much faster than pump it in, pump it out. And it's going to save us several million dollars and allow us to process much quicker. So I think it was a no-brainer, basically, of why we wouldn't do that. And it'll be something that we'll consider on the north end, too. Instead of a underground tank, we haven't made that decision yet because we have most of our problems in the north end, but we may use a combination of things up there down the road to, as technology changes, we want to stay on top of it, and we want to be able to do more, you know, without spending a whole lot more money. In this case, we're going to save some funds that then we can go do something else.
And you also have two new projects that were improved by NDOT.
Yeah, we've got a couple of big projects. I'm really finally happy to report that we have our notice to proceed for Margaret Avenue from 7th to 14th Street. That's a widening. You know, we did 3rd to 7th a few years ago, And now we're working on the 7th to 14th section. We'll be widening that street and all the things that go along with that, storm drains and the like, and a trail system, adding to the trail system. So we're glad that's fully funded and the work will begin immediately. Utility work has begun, but actual road construction will start in the next 45 to 60 days. And then on 3rd Street, we have a beautification project that we've been working on for several years, from Poplar up to Cherry. And so what we'll be doing is milling the street down, new sidewalks, new ADA ramps, repaving the street, and then adding some landscaping in the middle of the street to improve the appearance, hopefully slow traffic down as it passes through the downtown area. We'll be painting all the light poles and the traffic signals and cleaning up some of the signage. Really trying to make that stretch look really nice, and then also help with the safety aspect by, one, as I said, slowing the traffic down, but helping pedestrians get across 3rd Street. So we ran into some red tape on that one. It slowed us down, but work will commence here very soon, and the majority of that work will be completed before winter.
Just a follow-up, since we talked about last month on the whole TIF funds and the account management there, the State Board of Accounts a week ago initiated a review of that Redevelopment Commission. Mm-hmm. Has anything new happened since then?
No, not really.
Still too early.
It is, and we're thankful and happy that they're doing that. You know, all along we've made sure that everything that we did, we ran by them first, and so I feel very confident about our processes. But I think it's good for them to come in and just take a look at it, because this is going to affect every community in the state. If it's going to be an issue with the new TIF legislation, then we want to get it right in Terre Haute, you know, and if the law needs to change or the legislature needs to act on something, that's great, because you're going to hear more and more of these kinds of things as you progress through the implementation of this new law. And so we're looking forward to that review, and whatever comes out of that, we'll work with to make sure we're in total compliance, and the sooner the better.
I see where the City of Terre Haute is receiving 30 recycling bins designed specifically for placement at City Hall, the government campus, the police station, and all the city fire stations, but mm-hmm. it's part of a national recycling bin grant. How did that come about?
Well, we've applied the last couple years and we didn't get it, but this year we finally did. And, you know, some of these things seem like, well, it's not that big of a deal, it doesn't cost that much, but, you know, with tight budgets, we don't really have the money to go out and buy a bunch of recycling bins. We just didn't do that. We put a few in, but we wanted to cover, and really to help promote recycling in the community, we thought we really need to cover all of our bases first. And so we were very fortunate to get this grant, and we're in the process of acquiring those right now, and we'll put them in all these key locations, and it'll help us internally to begin to make sure we're being good stewards and doing everything we can, and then it will help us then to promote even more within the community. So it's a small thing, but I think it's going to help us to make some big steps in the future.
And I read about ground being broken in a new project that will house veterans. A reoccurring theme with Kokomo is we just did a quick story on their grand opening of a veterans home. Mm-hmm. How did all this come together here in Vigo County?
Well, you know, we've really been working on the homeless situation for a while, and have a new facility that was built and then another piece that was added on to that. But we found that there are veterans that are kind of a little bit of a distinct group of those homeless folks. And not all of them are homeless, but they're in substandard housing. They're just in situations they need to improve that housing stock for themselves. And so we really kept talking about it and saying, well, we need to really focus on the veterans. So there's actually two things going on here. We had the recent groundbreaking for three duplexes that'll be down in the 13th, 14th, and Holman area that will support veterans. Then we've also got a bigger project that's going to be out on Locust Street that will be for veterans. That will be, we're working through that process right now to hopefully get that project fully approved and construction started later this year. So really it was just a concerted effort here to deal specifically with veterans to get them in more quality housing who don't have that now. And there's a big need. And I'm just glad that we've all been able to come together as a community and pull these projects off, because I think it's going to improve their personal situations dramatically.
And speaking of other fun things to do, we have a Twitter question. They'd like to hear more about the community splash pad that would come with the new aquatic center.
Well, that'll be our project that we're going to do. The aquatic center construction will start in the next couple of months, and then their intent is to open it up next school year, so next August. we're hopeful that sometime next year then we can do a few upgrades to Voorhees Park. One would include a trail around the park and a splash pad that we would like to add to that next to the playground. So we're really going to turn that into one of our least utilized parks into one of our most utilized parks in the next 12 to 18 months.